Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RHAP B&B, a Survivor Fun and Games podcast. My name is Mike Bloom, here to break down everything that happened in Survivor 35, Episode 2. I am joined by a lovely panel of individuals. First, let me start with the person who is here week in and week out, the co-owner of the RHAP B&B, Liana Boris. Liana, how are you doing this week?
I'm great. I'm just so excited for all the challenges this episode. I'm ready to go bananas. Hopefully no one double crosses me. And did I tell you that you're playing for $1 million?
I'm glad you're telling us as opposed to telling, 16 individuals at this point who still don't know they're playing for $1 million. That's a very veiled reference. For those of you that are not fans of the challenge, be warned, there might be a lot of names being thrown about over the next of the course hour and a half that you might not be completely aware of, but we still hope you stick around. But it's all too apt because our guest is the expert on everything MTV here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups, currently covering this season of the challenge, which is in like month 9 of coverage for the year 2017, and also the 6th season of Are You the One? Ali Lasher, welcome to the B&B.
It's great to be here. I've been saying all week that I'll be checking in this weekend. I love being able to say that. I'll also say, if you're not a fan of the challenge, we won't explain things and you should just stop listening. And also, if you're at the gym, you should also stop working out and give us your full attention. None of this par-har BS. I'm coming in hot to the B&B.
Yeah, shade thrown. I guess you should not be staying in Jordan's room then, because he's left some free weights around next to that giant Allen Ball poster he has in the corner. So we'll give you another room here at the B&B. Ali, we are so happy to have you. We have so much stuff to get to in talking about episode 2. But before we get into it, for those who might not necessarily know your background with Survivor, can you just give like a quick Survivor resume of yours, when you started watching, if you have any favorite seasons or players or anything like that?
Oh, God. I started watching season 1 with my grandma, who we still watch together now virtually. We call each other during commercial. She's in Florida. I'm wherever I am at any given time. I've watched every season, but my RHAP weakness, if this is a weakness, you're often penalized for having just watched every season as you grew up. So like, I'm a big fan. I've watched every season, but I never went back and did a rewatch. I did rewatch a couple seasons. I watched Token Sheens because I was in Max Dawson's Survivor class at Northwestern, which really exposed me to the Survivor fandom that exists. I thought I was just watching in isolation. When Steven and Aaron Lobdell and Cochran was more recent, but Mookie came to class, I like went back and rewatched their seasons for homework purposes, you know, very academic. Yeah, I watch weekly. I now host a Survivor party with people who just got into the show, a mixed variety of fandom, but a lot of people I got them into watching while at law school. So it's just been a really great ride watching Survivor and also being exposed to this community over the last, how long have I been out of college? Couple of years.
I was just gonna say, I'm sorry you got exposed to the Survivor fandom.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm sorry you got exposed to Mookie. God only knows what he caught over there at Ravu. He was over there for so long. I'm so intrigued. What was Mookie like in person?
Mookie was super nice. Very, very nice. Very like, I want to say he like talked a lot about how bullshit the have not element of the season was, which I don't know if I'm putting that on him because I thought it was bullshit, but I'm pretty sure he like complained a lot about that kind of thing, like hearing in his reactions to other survivors' conditions. He was like, wait, what? You had that?
Well, for those of you that don't remember, Mookie was, I believe, the only person on that season to never have gone to the really nice furnished camp on Moto. Because I believe even when they merged, they got rid of that shelter and they had to build from the ground up. So Mookie might have had the worst living conditions of any Survivor contestant ever. And hopefully I'm not being too hyperbolic there.
And he was well aware of it on the Survivor panel.
Yeah. Hey, if I had something to complain about, too, I would go full throttle. I would come full tilt, if you will, complaining about the conditions on Survivor.
Full tilt sprint in your complaints there, or sprint to the complaint department. Before we get into the fun and games of it all, you know, we're two episodes into the season at this point. We didn't talk about it last week, but I would love to get each of your thoughts as to what you're feeling about Survivor 35 a couple of episodes in. How are we, especially compared to, you know, the wealth of information we got in the preseason? How are we liking what's actually being played out on the screens? Liana, let's start with you.
Well, you know, I think for me, and I think a lot of other people, the premiere episode felt really rushed and was just sort of, I remember when I watched it the first time, just it was, you know, scene after scene after scene. And I was really trying to keep track of everything that was happening. And I thought this episode did a much better job slowing everything down. And even though, you know, the camp life scenes really centered around two or, you know, one or two people, even, we still got to see a lot more. And I felt like I actually had room to breathe. I always love new players seasons. And so I think getting to know these characters is fun. Although I will say, yeah, you know, considering all of the preseason information we had, it's kind of weird. It almost feels like I'm learning less about these people now that the show has actually started, whereas I knew them so much better going into the preseason.
Mm-hmm. Allie, what did you think about the season?
I really like this cast. I love a new player season. I think there's a lot of great potential in this cast. I'm a little let down by the portrayal of the women. I think we're like missing a lot of the female stories here. There are like one or two women that have stuck out. We saw Simone because she exited this week, or checked out, if you will. But I do think it's a really strong cast of characters, a lot of standouts, and a lot of people that I already love to hate episode two, which is really important to me personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, Simone did check out indeed this week. And speaking of which, Liana, we're going to have to call a custodian to the pool because I believe there's a situation going on there.
And it's not a candy bar.
Yes, it's not. Unfortunately, she did not caddyshack at lunch. Lady Denise, if you could get in there and clean up, that'd be fantastic. Yeah, I will sort of give the editors credit for this second episode in that I do agree with Liana in that I do think it was a step up above the first in that it felt less rushed. I always think it's tough when the results is pretty on the wall, you know, written out. Mm-hmm. It seemed that with both of these votes, these were people who were on the outs for one reason or another, and it was a unanimous vote against them. And I think Survivor editing parlance wants them to essentially say, okay, there's a chance that they maybe won't go when really that isn't the case. So I think they had a tough try to sort of make a meal out of it this week. That being said, I think we got a lot of character stuff this week, which I personally was happy about. Hell, we got like a JP in the water being a provider type of storyline, which I didn't expect we'd be able to see. I feel like we have a good handle on a good amount of the people. I think we know where everyone on the Heroes tribe is at. I think we know where everyone on the Hustlers tribe is at. The Healers is still the big question mark. And to be completely honest, this is my bold prediction. I don't think we're seeing the Healers go to Tribal Council until after a swap. So maybe there's a chance we just won't see them for the next couple of episodes. But I am really enjoying this cast. You know, first one out and all the preseason interviews really pumped me up. So even though it's really been two straightforward votes the past couple weeks, I'm enjoying seeing these people interact for what it's worth.
Can I ask you a question? And I know this has been discussed a bit on the various Survivor podcasts, but do you think it's a failure of the editing that we don't know, except, but if not for Josh Wigler's tireless preseason work, that we would not know that Patrick and Allie knew each other before? I feel like that so influenced her decision this week, or at least like it made no sense to the audience I was watching with, who didn't watch the preseason stuff or listen to the preseason stuff. It made no sense to them why Allie wasn't voting out Patrick based on the editing. And I know it seems like from Simone's exit press that Simone didn't know they were friends before. They were keeping it under wraps. Do you think we should have at least gotten a confessional of Allie saying that so that we like understood, or next week we get something like that? Because I think it's like almost unfair to hide.
Well, I mean, I think in you know, exposing the true story of what's going on. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, clearly this had a huge influence over the decision, right? Because it was never phrased from, oh, Patrick's really strong in challenges and that's why we should keep him. In fact, there was really no reason why, you know, Patrick is the person we should keep over Simone. It was more that Simone, you know, just doesn't fit in. And then Patrick is also this insane person. And so clearly their relationship is having some impact in the game. But I think that, you know, I don't understand how the producers didn't know. I mean, the fact that these are people who, according to Simone, I guess in her exit press, said that they lived across from each other. You know, he helped move her mattress, that they, you know, hadn't crossed paths. But I think that, I mean, the editors are never going to let us know. I mean, there's no way that this is going to happen. I think it would be nice, but I don't think there's any way it's going to happen.
The closest we came to this was when in Survivor Gabon, when after they did that second swap and Marcus and Crystal realized that one of Marcus's best friends is Crystal's cousin. And, you know, I think they might have just provided that just to like make some interesting drama for when she ends up betraying him and voting him out. And we've seen this in other instances as well. I believe in Survivor Samoa, it was what Brett and Laura Moret went to the same church or something. So I think we've seen these circumstances before, but I think it's sort of like, I mean, I think Cass on the Know-It-Alls, when she was subbing in this week, actually sort of compared it to pre-gaming in a returning player season. I wouldn't say it's exactly a one-for-one relationship, but it sort of is in the same category where it exists in this really murky area that kind of resides outside the game, and the show really wants to focus on what's happening within the game. So because of that, they're really not going to focus on it unless it becomes a case where, you know, if Allie makes it to the final tribal council and Patrick's on the jury and he says, you know, I moved your mattress up 7 flights of stairs, you still haven't given me a tip for it, like, why should I give you $1 million? Then you could really bring it to light. But otherwise, I feel like this is sort of something that's outside the game, and so they don't really want to show it.
And it's also a failure of casting, right? Like, if they didn't know and put them on the same tribe and like wouldn't have otherwise, it's like an admitted failure of the casting process. No.
Well, yeah. And the fact that they put them on the same tribe, I think, is really funny. Although I will say this does allow for a lot of sort of fun. I don't want to call them Easter eggs because I don't think they're necessarily put in here intentionally. But when Allie or Patrick is talking about one another, or, you know, just talking in general about being on the beach and sort of making these connections. So, for example, Allie says something along the lines of, you know, me and Pat have been together since day one. Yeah. Like, well, you've really been together since like day negative 900.
We've been together since day one of college when he moved me in.
Like, oh, and yeah, I think it's frustrating, but I'm also, I guess, just as an avid Big Brother watcher, I'm used to shows just sort of like sweeping stuff under the rug or ignoring things. So this is maybe, you know, just par for the course for me. So maybe that's why it doesn't frustrate me that much. But I can imagine, like, if I were Simone, oh my goodness, I would be so upset.
MTV never does that.
There was this pre-existing relationship.
They're just like really stick
to
the rules.
No, never. Always.
Yes, they're strict rule abiders at MTV. They're notoriously known for it. Well, we got our overall thoughts about the episode. Let's dive into some of these fun and games here. We're going to start like we start every week with our time capsule predictions. For those of you that don't remember, before the season started, Leon and I each wrote up specific predictions of how we thought each castaway were going to do. We seal them away, try to not remember them, only to open the specific person's predictions when they get voted out. We're going to read them off, and it was a new discovery last week that this is now a game, apparently. Allie, as the guest, we're going to read off the predictions, and you get to decide. You get to be the judge. Use this law degree in transit that you're building to right now to be able to determine who was the more correct in the prediction.
This is actually what my law school admissions essay was about, that I would later use this to judge predictions.
Important use of your law degree, definitely.
All right, Liana, what was your prediction for Simone before the season started?
Okay, this is what I had written for Simone. Ah, Simone, another victim of the Hustler tribe's early struggles when it comes to immunity challenges. The unlikely alliance of Patrick, Allie, Devin, and Ryan, Mr. Turtleneck himself, finds her annoying. Simone attempted to hide in the jungle with her camouflage bathing suit, but to no avail. She should have spent more time at the Milford Academy. She is promptly voted out at Tribal Council after attempting to throw everyone under the bus, or tuk-tuk if you're Keith Nail.
So your prediction was that she went pre-jury?
And she went pre-jury, yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, Allie, I feel like you don't really have to make a King Solomon-like decision here, because like Stephen Fishback, I was way off target on Simone in my prediction. I said, for all of the fear about Simone based on her comments about others in her interviews, she chooses to take the mentality of shut up at camp, vent in the confessionals. As a result, she comes off rather innocuous to the rest of her hustlers. She'll decide to step out of the woodwork at the beginning of the merge, figuring it's time for her to cut some throats and make her big move, but will end up blowing up in her face. My prediction, makes the jury. So I feel like by default, Allie, you can give down the official ruling, but I'm pretty sure I know what the verdict's going to be.
Well, here's the thing. My jaw hit the floor at the first half of Liana's prediction, because that was like scary. Like, are we checking these sealed envelopes? Do we have like the people at Price Waterhouse or whoever? Like, are you handcuffed to the briefcase?
Yeah, I don't know. After what happened at the Oscars, I don't know if we should even trust them.
But I can share. Yeah, this is what I have written. I thought I had her going jury when I was thinking back, because I had, I mean, spoiler alert, I had Lauren going pre-jury, and I thought she was going to be the one that was the victim and of the hustlers. But I was like, I read this back, I was like, oh god. But I will say, as far as like the validity of my predictions, Patrick, I have Patrick forming this like dominant alliance, and he's the head of it. And so I really don't think that that's going to come to fruition. So we'll see how these pan out in the long term.
But to Mike's credit, before I pass my official ruling, I thought that would have been my prediction, right? Like, because she is like pseudo a student of Rob's, right? Where I could hear Rob being like, whoa, 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 whoa. But like, you know, she has this connection to the patron group, which is a connection to Rob. She was so eager and excited to give information to RHAP specifically on her exit interview. And like, that's Rob's whole MO, is like, bitch in the confessional, be quiet at camp. I mean, that seems like common wisdom. So you would think if anyone had been exposed to that, it would have maybe been Simone. So I give you credit in terms of matching what my prediction might have been. But yeah, I mean, Liana had my chin on the ground. I had to scrape it up.
Well, I'm happy that at least I appealed to your heart, Allie, whereas Liana pretty much captured all the other parts of your body.
Whoa. What is this? Cannibalism at the art? This is what you fear when you book an RHAP B&B. The hosts haven't been vetted.
Yep. It turns into an Eli Roth film halfway through, right, before you even realize it. Oh boy. By the way, for those of you that didn't know, I had a very fun exit interview with Simone as well, where she talked a little bit about her game, and we tied in some Bachelor talk as well. It turns out Simone had decided to, in order to have conversations with people out on the island, she decided to just watch The Bachelor because there was a good chance she'd be on the island with someone who watched the show, and she unironically fell in love with it, and she was a Raven fan. So hopefully that shows just the type of person that Simone was and how willing she was able to go to be able to be able to fit in with people on the island, even though it might not have necessarily been the case.
That's amazing. That's why I watch Veep. It's like the reverse. I watch Veep to have like conversations with intelligent people who don't want to talk about reality television with me. I like, that's my highbrow show. So it's amazing that she like
Veep is the show.
Well, I have to watch. I like it. Has I have to be willing to watch it. Like, Veep is where I'm willing to go. It's not TV. And it's like still funny. And it's like, you'd be surprised when people are like, oh, you watch Game of Thrones? I'm like, no, but I watch Veep. And then I totally shift the dialogue.
I just imagine this like opera house gala with all these people in tuxes. And Allie's like, so did you see what Jonah was up to on the latest Veep?
That is 100%. I mean, I'm not at any galas, but that is like, people are like talking about like their latest books they've been reading. And I'm like, but like, did you catch Veep last night?
Oh boy, that's like the, like, you know, when people would say like, oh, did you check out Charlie Rose? Oh yes, I watched a great Veep in which Selena Myers ate bad frozen yogurt and pooped herself. Oh boy. All right, well, let's get to our next segment, and maybe we can tie it into some Veep episodes on the way here. So this is actually a suggestion from the great John Krause over the course of the week. In honor of Jordan Parhar is gone but not forgotten here, his poster is on the wall to show his mark on the B&B. Jordan was a big Alan Ball fan, so we're going to take a segment directly from Alan's activity last week called Crazy or Confident. And so what's going to happen in this game is that we're going to give out some decisions that people in this episode made, and we're going to try to figure out if we are confident in them, if we feel like they are good decisions, or if we say, that's crazy, you shouldn't have done that. Allie, how do you feel about this?
I feel like this is a game people play every time they meet me, so...
they're like, she just brought up Veep, now is she crazy or confident?
I'm ready for this. I like this game.
All right, so let's start with, you know what, let's start with the heroes, because I feel like we're not going to talk too much about the heroes, if I'm prognosticating for, because they got a little bit of stuff, but they didn't go to Tribal Council this episode after definitely making an impact on the first episode. I want to talk about Chrissy's very, you know, by the numbers, almost Terminator-like resilience when it comes to picking and choosing her number two ally. She ultimately, through a vetting process, decides on Ben. Liana, Chrissy choosing Ben as an ally, crazy or confident?
I think it's confident. I really like this decision. First of all, I really love Chrissy and I really love Ben. They were in any draft in the preseason. If I could get my hands on one of them, I was happy. And so to see them pair up, and maybe this is just me, I was super excited about it. But I think you look at the other people on her, you know, on the Heroes tribe. Alan is crazy. Ashley is probably confident, but she's got this, you know, not power couple with JP. And I think Ben comes across as somebody who would be a really good ally. I know that there is some talk of, oh, well, he's really charismatic. But I think early on, that's going to be beneficial. And then also, you know, he's the type of person who he's just so charismatic that when you get towards the end game, people are going to take him out over her. You know, he becomes the not meat shield, but like charismatic shield, like the charisma shield for her. And so I love this decision and I go with confident.
All right, Allie, crazy or confident?
This shit was crazy. I think it's not crazy that she wound up with Ben. If anything, I think that's like the obvious choice for her. It was crazy how she's like, I'm an accountant or whatever. She's like, I crunch numbers and I look at risk and odds. And here's like, I'm going to run through every other person who doesn't even want to work with me. And I'm going to wind up on the one person that I could like actually relate to and make it like this crazy financial, I'm insecure that I'm not actually on the right tribe analysis. I thought that was like completely laughable, that entire confession. But it's confident in the sense that she like ran through it like she could get anyone on her side after being in the bottom two week one. But I got to go crazy on the analysis.
By the way, well, Allie, that Chrissy imitation, spot on. It was like she was in the room.
No, so when I impersonate people, I'm never impersonating people. I'm giving you an audio representation of how I feel about the person.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's boiling it down to the core characteristics. It's like when Will Ferrell does George W. Bush on Saturday Night Live. It's not exactly a good impression. It's just more of a characterized impression.
Yeah, but with the feelings of how Allie feels about that person in there as well. So that's
it's very psychological. I really admire it. I can understand your points, Allie, because it is a really interesting vetting process. And you have to wonder if this is almost too methodical and not emotional enough for Chrissy, because I mean, Survivor at its core is an emotional game. You're playing with people. And so I can understand why she decided to, you know, weed out certain people. You know, JP is good in challenges, but he doesn't exactly have the best brain in that head. Ashley has this whole power couple target on her. I'm going to vote confident here because I do think I'm feeling this sort of like Malcolm and Denise vibe from the two of them. Speaking of another sort of doomed blue tribe from a three tribe season, in that they made a pact to not really be together at all, to really have mums the word for their correlation and to, you know, just sort of blend in with other people. They have other relationships. And so nobody's really going to know that they're secretly working together. And that works really well when it came down to three people in Survivor Philippines. Even Russell Swan didn't realize that Malcolm and Denise were together and they were literally the only two people left on the tribe. So I feel confident in these two. I'm hoping for the best of them moving forward.
I think Mum's the Word is the name of their alliance instead of the Mom Squad. It's the Mum's the Word alliance. This may be getting too much into the strategy of things, but I see Chrissy as almost the, you know, we talk about the Liz Markhams of the world, of how there's these really intelligent females, but who are very game body. And I think Chrissy's life experiences, plus her sort of game bodiness, like she makes this, in my mind, a very exciting character for me to root for. So
who's talking about the Liz Markhams of the world?
Reddit?
Oh, Allie, can you do your Liz Markham impression really quick?
Yeah, here we go. Ready? There you go.
Shade, the shade of it all. Well, let's move on to another hero, because we get a little bit again of some reverberations from what happened at the first tribal council, where Alan really went off the wall, off the ball here. But Alan seems to be very confident in his in himself, in that he felt like his plan worked perfectly. He really planted a seed of doubt in people's minds about the fact that JP and Ashley are this power couple. Allie, I feel like one of the reasons we had to invite you on this week as well is that they use the term power couple roughly 750 times. And I believe, wasn't there a season of The Challenge where like the winning team was called the power couple?
Yes. Yes, there was. I want to say it was like an X's season. Yes,
that makes sense. It's the irony of it all.
And then when you get the power couple dinner, that's what I would like to see on Survivor, is like the mediocre food power couple dinner where they do all their strategy. But that would be a different show. That would be The Challenge.
But it's basically one and the same at this point, right? Except The Challenge follows those strict rules. We need to remember it. But Alan's sort of reasoning here, that he felt he successfully was able to throw targets onto JP and Ashley. Crazy or confident?
That's crazy. I think the other thing with Alan, the only thing he was able to plant seeds of doubt in is in himself, especially if he's going to lose Ben here to this new underground alliance with half the mom squad. I think Alan's days are numbered. I don't think, here's the thing, he's like taking credit for what would have happened anyway. Like, it's not rocket science to say, oh, this is like a relationship forming, let's get one of them out. Like, you don't need to make someone strip down to their underwear, go nuts, like throw wrenches in tribal council of people who were going to vote with you otherwise, to point that out to people. Like, I just think that it's completely crazy that he thinks this part of his plan worked. I just don't think he's willing to admit that he like snapped a little bit on day one. But like, you're in good company, Alan. Aubrey snapped a little bit day one. Like, maybe there's hope for you. You could turn it around.
If you can dodge a wrench at tribal council, you can dodge the vote. I think, right, like, at this point, Alan is synonymous with crazy. And so I'll have to jump on that, too. But, you know, this is a, we're going to see what happens. I really could see Alan, you know, getting through this initial tribe swap and even possibly making merge. I think that the fact that he's coming across as a little insane, while possibly unpredictable, which, you know, you don't necessarily want to play with people who are unpredictable, I think he is the crazy shield, and that might be a reason to keep him around.
For some reason, when I'm imagining crazy shield, I'm imagining like one of those medieval shields, like covered in crazy straws, just to make it like kooky and fun. It's the crazy shield. But it's an interesting idea. That's sort of like what Boss and Rob did a little bit with Philip Shepard, right? This idea of, let me find someone who's a bigger target than me just because they're driving people off the wall. And who knows, maybe Allie's doing that with Patrick as well. But all that being said, I'm going to hop on the crazy train with you two and Ozzy Osbourne as well, and talking about Alan here. It just seems like, you know, the benefit was far less than the cost here, considering that, like Allie said, he lost his main guy, who really is like growing wary of him. It's obvious that JP and Ashley are clearly on him now. You know, I could see a situation where if the heroes do end up going back to tribal council, they might turn on Alan. I think there is a chance that he could squeak by, but I think he's done far much more harm than he initially anticipated with this plan.
I like, well, speaking of his plan, I love that Alan said in it, one of confessionals was, my plan worked essentially. I was like, not sure about that.
Speaking of which, actually, speaking of power couple, I'm interested, Allie, since Are You the One deals so much with this idea of couples joining up. If we put JP and Ashley in the truth booth, are you thinking perfect match or not a
match?
No match.
No match instantly. None of these early couples are ever a perfect match, Mike. Aren't you watching? Come on.
That's true. Are we taking the truth booth trade? Are we even not going to find out about their fate just to get some money in our pockets?
No, because it's just like, every single season, the same storyline happens, and every single season, both myself and the cast completely buy into it. So with such a strong initial couple out the gate, bonding on things such as being similar ages on the same tribe, they have to be a perfect match. We have to see that happen, Mike.
That's to deep. Be fair, though, they're of similar ages, which you can't say about Cole and Jessica. They have that above another power couple.
Oh, my God. She's so cute.
But so old.
She's super, super cute. She's super, super cute. She's practically geriatric. Well, let's move over to the healers because we have another power couple to talk about, but it's not Cole and Jessica. I want to sort of do a 1-2 punch here and talk about the Joe and Cole of it all when it comes to the idol. So we're going to do 2-1 here. Crazy or confident, both. Joe telling Cole about the idol clue, thinking that it's out on the raft, and then summarily Cole telling Joe that it's buried next to the well and them digging for the idol together. So each one of those, crazy or confident, Liana.
So I really still can't get over Joe in this circumstance because, you know, my job is to logically put together clues in order to, you know, try to discover new things about science, right? And just Joe's insistence that he thought it was the raft and that you have this moving target and that the ocean just represents in general the ocean, that it's not, you know, aligning you on the where the well is. I just couldn't get over it. I was laughing so hard. And then he goes and gets Cole, and then Cole tells him where it is. And then Joe goes, I never would have figured it out. And I was like, okay, well, what are the other things Joe won't notice or figure out? And it was just this whole thing was just a hot mess. I wish there was a hot mess crazy or confident because I would give it hot mess, but I think I'll go with crazy instead.
All right. What about with Cole telling Joe about? So you do crazy for both sides of those?
Yeah. I think. And oh my gosh. And then this was also part of it. It was just the complete buffoonery of this whole situation, because then Cole talks about how, you know, he's a wildlife guide and what he does is super cool after learning about it. But, you know, he talks about
super
like he's
cute.
Helping super cute, just super cute. It's, you know, he's helping Joe. I'm like, oh, that's so sweet of you. Joe is like one of your troubled teens. I don't know. The whole thing was just a disaster.
I like how, yeah, Cole thinks that Joe has the mentality of like a 17-year-old that got in the graffiti or something because, you know, he doesn't have a lot of love at home. That's essentially what Cole's trying to compare Joe to. Allie, crazy or confident for everything that happened with Joe and Cole? Here?
Joe's crazy. He's always going to be crazy. He's always been crazy. And this is no exception. It's completely crazy to assume. I mean, everything everyone said about this, it's crazy to assume it'd be 5 feet in the ocean. It's crazy to assume that somebody fishing means that they'd have the idol. It's crazy to have the confidence to like confront him right away and just assume that that's going to be anything for him. And it's just crazy to find a clue and then tell anyone about it on your tribe without fully thinking about it. On the other hand, I will take a maybe slightly controversial position about Cole. I'm gonna say that this was fine, like confident, whatever. I think the alternative would have put him in a worse situation. I think there's power in knowing that Joe has the idol, especially someone as crazy as Joe, who's probably not gonna use the idol and is gonna be cocky enough where you could probably convince him that he's safe and vote him out with the idol. Yes, it's better for you to have it, but Joe's going to be on you like white on rice, watching you like sniff around for it. And if he catches 1 ounce of the idea that you might be snaking him, I think he's just crazy enough to like completely blow up his game and yours. So I think Cole made the right move given the players in this situation.
Okay. So I will say in terms of the first half of the equation with Joe going to find Cole, yeah, I call this crazy. And it's not just because of Joe's sort of a blanket assumption that the square represents the raft. I don't know what he was expecting the idol to look like. Would you think like Cole would bring back a fish and Joe thought that that was the idol for some reason? Because that's the only thing that like would be disguised enough in the middle of the ocean. But the fact that Joe was trying to be so sly, insisting like, you know what? I know you have the idol. It's okay. You can tell me. I mean, it's a thing where he tried the exact same thing with Mike. And because Mike sort of floundered a little bit, like he felt like, oh, okay, I can get one up on these people by trying out this tactic. By the way, slight tangent. I sort of love the Joe Mike dynamic in that Joe is treating Mike like the butt monkey of the healers tribe. I don't know if you guys noticed this episode when Joe's like, hey, Mike, it looks like we're all on the beauty tribe, except for you and me. We're both pretty ugly. Like, Mike did not say, yep, I agree. He just, like, Joe just put that out there.
Yeah, he straight up called him. He's like, you're one ugly dude. I was like, okay. All right, Joe, that is confident.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much like if Joe's the Michael Scott, then Mike is the Toby, ironically enough, where he's just like, oh, man, Mike, you're such a loser, but I love you. You're my loser. But it seems like he's trying to do the same tactics with Cole here, and it doesn't end up working a little bit. So I'm going to go crazy for Joe. But I'm going to have to kind of agree with Allie here in this hot take. I think I might have to go confident for Cole, because for me, it's sort of like the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. And you know that if you had like spent hours swimming out on the raft with Joe looking for the idol, I feel like no matter what, Joe would be going around saying like, oh, I think Cole definitely has the idol. It's clear that he found the idol and he was just, you know, leading me astray to please me. He really knows where it is. So maybe finding the idol with Joe also like brings some ties in with other members of the tribe. I think this is someone that you want to have on your side as opposed to spreading misinformation about you. It could come back to bite him because Joe seemed like he was ready to get rid of Cole for purely knowing too much. But I'm going to have to go with confident right now just because I feel like there's a greater risk in not telling him and him finding out later.
I don't know. Joe's kind of a crazy person. I feel like he'll implode if he's running around looking for the idol, just so panicked that he can't find it. But I definitely see what both of you are saying. And I think what Allie brought up about, you know, you can probably get Joe to feel confident enough that you can blindside him so he won't use it and everybody still votes him out. You know, you just say you're targeting Dr. Mike and he'll for sure believe that because he's one ugly dude.
Exactly.
I can see where the two of you are coming from.
Yes, exactly. No, we gotta get rid of the ugly person. This is the beauty tribe. I recast the season now. It's heroes versus hustlers versus beautiful
beauty.
People. Heroes versus hustlers versus handsome. That's what the new season's about. Joe just recast it. And so, Mike, you don't fit in. You're on the way out. Let's move over to the hustlers. Let's talk about the much bereaved Simone here, who decides, you know what, she's a little bit out of her element, but she decides that she is going to be the one to gut the fish. As someone who's handling the tribe's only food source, Allie, was Simone crazy or confident in doing this?
I'm going to say it was confident. This was a real turning point in the edit for Simone. I thought when she started having success working that maybe this was going to be her saving grace in the game. And as somebody who also never camped, like Survivor looks like an absolute nightmare to me in terms of like sleeping outside and gutting fish and everything. I thought it was confident to step up and to really like get your hands in literally to the experience. So confident.
All right,
yeah.
Liana?
Yeah, I would absolutely go confident too. And, you know, especially with Lauren there, somebody who, that, you know, she's a commercial fisherwoman. And so to have her out there and to kind of show that, look, you know, I'm willing to do it. I want to work. I want to do this. I read up on how to get the fish. I thought this was confident and I was very proud of her because that's gross.
Yeah, I do agree with Allie. I think that you definitely, when you were watching the episode, I thought, okay, they're definitely setting up Simone here to be the boot. But then in the same segment, she almost gets this weird all-in-one redemption edit mm-hmm. over the course of a 5-minute period where it's like, oh, wait, she can gut the fish. This is more of a David Wright scenario than it is like a skinny Ryan, and not talking about the, as she calls him, the skinniest Ryan in Ryan Ulrich of this season. Someone might need to compare the numbers as to who is actually skinnier, Ryan Ulrich or Ryan Shoulders. But I'm going to go with confident as well. I do think this was Simone's one shining moment in the course of this episode.
You mean her being afraid of the fly you didn't think was a shining moment?
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, this moment shines, even that moment shines much more than all the stuff that Patrick is up to, which we'll definitely talk about coming up. We have one more thing for crazy or confident, and it's probably the biggest judgment we're going to have to weigh here. It was pointed out to us by several members in the Rob Has a Podcast patron group. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but at one point, Allie Elliott, the person who seemed to hold all the keys to the Hustlers tribe, was shown sitting in the middle of the ocean wearing jeans and boots, completely clothed from the waist down, just sitting in the middle of the ocean, letting that salt water seep in. Liana, Allie's choice here, crazy or confident?
I don't know what she was thinking. As somebody who has gotten shoes wet in puddles, that takes forever to dry. And one of the biggest things I hear, you know, former Survivor players talk about is that you never get dry on Survivor. You're always wet. And so I really don't understand this decision to wear jeans and shoes into the ocean. So I'm going crazy.
Mm-hmm. Allie, what about you?
I'm ready to call you crazy, Mike, unless I see a screen grab. I'm like, Pixar didn't happen. Did you both notice this during the show? Am I crazy?
We luckily had the Rob Has a Podcast patrons pointing out, and we'll definitely post the picture on Rob Has a website as well for the on the post on the website just to show people. But yeah, there's a shot of her sort of contemplating things while she's sitting in the middle of the water, just wearing jeans and complete footwear.
Wow, that I never like to turn on my fellow Allies. Because there's no room for crazy with someone named Allie. You know, just everybody really has it together. But that's pretty crazy. Like, I need to understand that. Like, did she have an accident in the jeans and the shoes? Like, I don't understand possibility. Like, why you would ever be wearing that combination of clothing into the ocean.
This was like a mistaken aqua dump type situation.
Yeah, I mean, considering the other bathroom situations, I think it might be within the realm of possibility. I've heard, not so nice things about what the coconut popcorn that they make out in Fiji wreaks sort of havoc on your digestive system. I did not even think about that. Then maybe it was sort of like she was too embarrassed about what might have happened. And so she decides to move herself into the ocean, much like Patrick had moved her in several years ago when they started in college. Yeah, this is crazy to me. Unless, as you mentioned, she has an ulterior motive. I mean, Rupert literally had to have an entire skirt created for him, because he got his jeans immediately wet in the start of Pearl Islands, and then there was no looking back. Now, I will give Allie some plus points. I know we're not doing buffer snuff this week, but her, like, Michael Jackson jacket at Tribal Council, I loved. But if she wears that in the ocean next week, then I might be officially out on Allie's choices here.
Yeah, who will be the Burton to point out her butt in her, like, little makeshift skirt?
Okay, so this hour... Oh, I just interrupted you.
Yeah, I just want to add that she's gorgeous. Oh my goodness, I will echo Simone on that. Like, and she seems to be good player.
Great goddess. She does great things with her hair. Yes. Her hair is so malleable. She rocked at least like three different do's over the course of the hour.
So at this hour, I've been provided with a photo from Liana and Mike, and can confirm that this is crazy. Although usually.
Allie makes a really good point.
That's like,
I like how you were. Did you mean to loop it over and over?
No, it's just that's how it is. It's amazing. But so while Allie has provided me with the greatest sound drop of my entire life to have forever, this is unfortunate. This is completely crazy. And Mike Christensen, I guess, who like took a screenshot of this, got her at the worst possible moment, washing out her armpit. So it's just like so sad on so many levels. I know we're not playing buffer snuff, but. It's a firm snuff.
Now, I want to ask you, Allie, because you said that your grandmother watches the show as well. Does she hold a lot of love towards Allie purely by a name connection?
We haven't discussed that yet, but that's a good point. Usually she does her own little buffer snuff, but it's usually just like there are two times where she's done buffer snuff related activities. The first is when Max Dawson got naked on Survivor and she told me to tell him that that's not a nice thing to do. So that was one. And two is when Jeremy Collins was getting oiled up in that like slide challenge. We were actually watching this together and she goes, "That's a good looking man."
Oh my gosh, how do we book your grandma on the show?
Oh,
so that's
God.
One snuff for Max, one buff for Jeremy. I will check in with her about Allie.
I'm going to have to we do a question of the week every week. I think we're going to do like a question of the week specifically for Allie's grandmother. Like, what Survivor contestant would you like to oil up this season? Oh my goodness. All right. That does it for Crazy or Confident this week. We're going to let that hang out to dry, much like Allie's shoes and jeans for the next several days. Liana, what's next on the docket?
Yeah. So that was, maybe a little bit more serious. Now we're going to get into some just ridiculously silly stuff. So we're going to play a game called Pat Chat, AKA Weird Stuff Patrick Does, AKA Patrick is Unpredictable. So Allie, you're going to be playing this game. I'm going to read you four things that Patrick did during the episode. Three of which he actually did, and one I wrote. So this is very similar to Casual's Corner. Three are true, and one is false. It is your goal to try to pick out the false thing that Patrick did not do on this episode. And it's just this episode, this single episode, these are all things that he did, except for obviously the fake ones. Are you ready to play?
I don't like my chances in this game because I am so physically shaken to my core by the things that Patrick is and does. I hate everything he chooses to be. But I will say I spent most of the time while he was on the episode like bitching about him on the episode, so I don't know that I really caught all the nuances of annoyance.
Oh, this is the perfect crowd to do it in front of them.
Let's do it.
Yeah, no, it's totally fair. Oh my gosh. Okay, well, we'll get into it. All right. So question number one, Patrick ran down the beach with a sharp stick, is afraid of crabs, does a backflip into the water to give the idol back to Probst, and blew raspberries.
So one of those, he didn't actually do. Three of those, he did do, again, over the course of a 42-minute episode.
All right, he definitely blew raspberries, because I remember that that's when Rimmer was talking about him, right? And he just goes...
Yep.
Look at you probing out Allie, giving Lauren by her last name. Yeah,
well, it's easier to remember. I like it. She carries it well. The crabs is when he was like, ooh, ooh. And they were like, did you get pinched? And he was like, no. So if that's being afraid of crabs, I'll say that. I think I remember that. So I wasn't watching if he did the backflip, but that seems like it'd be more memorable than running down with the stick. I remember the dive, the like gratuitous frat star dive into the pool that I guess Cole did to retrieve the idol. I'm going to say that he didn't do a backflip.
That's correct. Yes. He just tossed it back to Probst. Nice.
Well, and I guess it was, I don't know if this counts, but it was Alan who did like the weird, like, I'm not a swimmer, but I wouldn't even know what to call that thing that he did in terms of getting the idol back from Probst after the heroes won the challenge.
Yeah, like it wasn't quite a belly flop. It was like a side flop.
Did Cole not dive in? Am I confusing events?
Cole did as well, like an actual dive. It was fun, though, when they, because I think they had Mike and they had someone else throw the idols to Probst, but then they dove in to get them. The fun thing about Alan is that Alan's dive actually reminded me of something a football player would do when they get to the goal line. So I think if Alan's really trying to hide his, you know, his real identity out there, I think he's doing a poor job because he's deciding to accidentally mimic behaviors of NFL players.
Yeah, he's got the end zone celebrations down.
I do want to just lodge one complaint with Alan Ball, that I tried to use him being an NFL player to get more people to watch the show with me. And they're like, oh, who? And I said it and nobody knew who he was. So bummer, Alan. Thanks for nothing.
You're going to have to take that up with the head of the Alan Ball fan club, Jordan Parha.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Question number two. Number one, when Jeff Probst announces, take a look at the new Heroes tribe, Patrick is literally the only person to look the exact opposite direction. Number two, he does a horrible Australian accent. Number three, he herds a crab with a stick and a machete. And number four, he broke the fourth wall and acknowledged the camera.
Damn it. I know he did the Australian accent.
If you call that an accent.
I know he had that scene with the crab. So that seems like on target. The last one was what?
He broke the fourth wall and acknowledged the camera.
Oh, frig. Ugh, this is what I get for complaining about a contestant instead of watching so vigilantly. Let's say that he, but so like breaking the fourth wall could be just like looking at the, doing like a dopey look to the camera, right?
Let's say he does the like Jim Halpert and looks at the camera.
I know that's not Veep, Allie, but that's a reference to The Office.
No, I will, let's say he doesn't break the fourth wall.
Yes, that's correct.
I didn't even realize that Patrick, they said, come on, look at the new Heroes track. And he looks at the opposite direction.
This is like all credit to Jeff Pittman, who's been, you know, killing it with, the, you know, these little catches. But yeah, it's so funny. There's a picture of all of them lined up, all of the hustlers and all of the healers turned. And Patrick's just facing the complete opposite direction. I have no idea what he's doing. Oh, it's so funny.
Like, where are they? Where'd they go? Where'd they come from?
I was going to say, The only reason I made this decision is with the fourth wall, I don't think he has the comedic timing to do that. And I also don't think he has the self-awareness required. Because if anyone's breaking the fourth wall, it's somebody else on his tribe about him.
I don't think that he knows the cameras are there. Like, he's just sort of off in his own little world. So, yes, that was a good call. All right. Question number three. Number one, he gnaws on the end of a stick and spits out the broken pieces. He performs dances at night while the rest of the tribe sleeps. He runs down the beach and does a backflip into the ocean. Or he examines his reflection lovingly in the diving mask.
All right, I know he gnawed the stick. I remember that.
Yeah, So I want to point out, like, these things. Okay, well, not to give the answer away, but he does that. He gnaws on the end of a stick.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about, like, I don't know if this guy's like part beaver or something, but my rationale behind it is that I know that survivors like to use sticks to clean their teeth. They use it as makeshift toothbrushes. Maybe Patrick, for some reason, just chomped down on it while he was brushing his teeth, and he decided to spit it out. But yeah, that's a weird piece of B-roll to capture.
It's like he's sort of like this kid that's like chews on something and then like realizes they don't like it, and he just kind of like like spits it out.
Yeah, it just reminds me of somebody like learning, like a small child learning what you can eat and what you can't eat. It didn't look like he was trying to do anything that would help him out. What was the fourth one? So we have dancing at night, waking people up, running and doing a backflip into the ocean,
and examines his reflection lovingly in the diving mask.
Oh god. Let's say I know that he like woke people up. I remember him like jumping up and down in front of the in front of the shelter. I'll say he did that. All right, this is a tough one because the last three are like, did anyone really do that? And he did two of them. All right.
Exactly.
The backflip would take skill. Like, you run into a backflip into the ocean. That's dangerous. Examining the reflection's easier to do. All right, let's say he doesn't do, but then now I'm trying to game the system. I'm like, you had the backflip the first time. Maybe it's because he did a backflip on the show at some point. Blah, 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 blah. All right, let's say he doesn't do the backflip into the ocean.
Oh, that is incorrect. Damn, he did. He did not perform dances at night. He right. only accosted Lauren about dancing in the shower or dancing at night.
All right.
I love that conversation because he was like, Lauren, what's your dance skills? And he just like kept asking her about it. I don't know if he was like looking at her dance card or something. He was trying to audition her to be on an Alabama regional company tour of a chorus line or something. But it was a weird question to bring about.
Yeah, no idea. All right. The final question of this this super serious quiz. These all. Okay. Literally half the ones I had were just that crab scene of him interacting with crabs. So this is a completely crab-oriented question. So, did Patrick throw a crab into the ocean, yell at crabs, recognize that he is much larger than a crab, or spike a crab like a football? Reminder, three of these things he actually did.
All right, I'm going to say he yelled. I'm going to say he acknowledged his size, and I'm now between spiking a crab like a football and throwing a crab into the ocean. I'm going to say he did not throw the crab into the ocean.
That's correct. He did.
You know, Alan Ball would have spiked the crab
exactly.
like a football, too.
Yeah.
What All a right. guy. Well, congratulations, Allie. You have won. I don't know. I was kind of hoping I would have come up with something at this point, but I haven't. So congratulations. You can go. Great. Yeah. You get some your very own pocket crabs. Look under your chair.
I'm going to have to go visit Dr. Mike.
Yeah, just be careful with that.
I will say,
I hear he's one ugly dude.
This is actually the worst thing I've ever won, because the fact that I can get into Patrick's mind is the biggest scare of all. So thanks
for
nothing.
You're closer to him than you think.
My condolences.
Yes, if anything, we make people realize who they are. We really hold a mirror up to society.
God, we're just doing such great work here.
You
I'm really proud.
You hold a swim mask up to society.
Yeah, maybe right. Look at it lovingly, like we're Gaston. All right, Liana, we just brought up a new segment, but we've got an old one, but a good one coming back this week now too.
Yeah, well, so we are gonna give out the Hero, Healer, and Hustler awards of the week. But I do want to mention quickly that when Patrick is yelling at the crowd, Ryan, and it's really quick, just goes, "Do you need a man's touch?"
Yeah, what was that?
I don't know, but it really made me appreciate Ryan. I just had to bring that up.
And I also love, I think it was Lauren's reaction to the scene was just, "What is wrong with you?"
Yeah, exactly. Why would you do that? Yeah, Patrick, touch that.
I want to see more Patrick, if only to just see more Lauren in pairing with Patrick. I know that they're going to have a spat next episode, it seems, but it seems like they're the perfect pairing of her just not putting up with his BS whatsoever.
Oh my gosh, he's an insane man. Anyway, yeah, we'll see what happens with him. But anyway, so to dig into our Hero, Healer, and Hustler Award of the Week. So as a refresher, this is where we give out three awards, one to the person who we think exemplified the hero characteristics, the healer characteristics, or the hustler characteristics. So first, we're going to start with the Hero Award of the Week. So Mike, who do you think deserves the Hero Award?
All right, so I'm going back to Jeff Probst's definition, to the heroes on the boat, Before off camera, he tried to bust Katrina for being an Olympic athlete, apparently. But he said that heroes are heralded for their courage or their ideals for which they stand. So I'm really trying to think about someone who had a lot of courage and was able to, you know, stand up for their ideals. Oh, this is so weird. I know I've been attributing this title to very weird people last week. I'm going to keep going this week. It takes a lot of courage to approach someone who is out on the ocean for hours and say that you have the idol and really stand by your beliefs there. Joe's my hero of the week.
Oh, my. Allie, what do you think about that?
I mean, it just like says a lot about the state of episode two. If Joe is your hero for the week.
Yeah,
I'm going by the literal definition here.
Yeah, okay, Mike, that's nice. I think maybe we need to take Mike out into the woods for some wilderness therapy. Okay, well, Allie, what do you think? Who do you think deserves the hero award of this week?
Who's the one who came out with the lobster on his...
Oh, JP.
All right. And things like that.
I'm going to say JP because he's my hero for... I love somebody who says they don't like drama and then does the most dramatic thing possible. And that's my personal definition of a hero. JP, I don't like drama, but I'm going to emerge from the ocean with a lobster dead and dangling from my spear, like trembling. Not dramatic at all. So JP and I both, we don't like the drama, and he's my hero of the week.
Now, I do want to say briefly, Leon, I believe last week you said that you might be doing a counter of the things like that mentions for this season. Do we have an updated tally as of yet?
Yes. For the official phrase and things like that, we are at 2, although he did say things like that, but it was sort of in reference to something else. So the official tally is 2 total for the season.
Can we just right now, while it's early on in the season, can each of the three of us put in our prediction of how many and things like that we're going to get to for the entire season?
Oh, man, I'm nervous for his boot episode when we get 10 or 12 and things like that. I think I'm going to go with lucky number 13.
All right, Allie.
I was hoping you'd come to me last. So I was going to bid $1. I'll say give me 15.
Oh, 15 is a good one. I'm going to go with 10 because I feel like we're only going to be shown JP when we need to be. So I feel like, you know, Rob predicted he'd have the J purple edit. I think that something else might be purple that was shown on him in the first episode, depending on how cold it was outside at night. But he hasn't been that purple so far. But I could see him fading into the background more and more if the heroes keep winning. So I'm going to say he has 10. By the time that he leaves. And I guess we'll go with the closest by the end of this all. So this is a long-seeded bet that's going to germinate over the course of the season.
Oh, my goodness. Speaking of things like that. So this was pointed out to me by a number of people on Twitter, you know, Ryan, Jen, and Evan as well. But talking about the underwear this season or like a new B&B segment, like Spot the Bulge or Butts Per Hour. I noticed this as well, but it was pointed out multiple people and on Reddit. And I would be remiss if I did not mention this.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe that's another metric we can take care of.
I think my first tweet of the night was like booties getting the winner's edit this season.
Yeah.
It was just booty, 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 booty.
Rocking everywhere.
There you go.
All right. So
Rorking everywhere.
Oh my God. Can I say, when you said put it in Rourke, I literally died when I listened to that. Are you done doing that? Again?
Oh, well, that's nice of you to come back from the dead to speak with us today.
Yes. Zombie Allie Lasher.
Okay. So not to get too distracted, moving on to the Healer Award. So Allie, who do you think most exemplified the traits of a healer this episode?
I'm going to give it to the man in the mock turtleneck, Ryan Ulrich, for 3 reasons. One, for the man's touch, for sure. Offering the healing touch of a tender man. I also think...
Oh, is Tender Man that horror movie character that comes and kidnaps children in a suit?
Yeah, that's the... Well, no, I thought that was the Penner movie.
Oh, yeah, no, that's the Bye Bye Man.
And then I also think he's healing old wounds of his own birthday parties past in Tribal Council. And one thing we just have to point out, I was watching with a fellow alumni of Max Dawson's class this week, Jonathan Foreman, who said... When Ryan is calling you weird, you know you have a problem. So not exactly healing, maybe more opening up some wounds for Patrick. But I think for all of those reasons, he's my healer of the week.
Well, I feel like I'm not an expert on medicine, but sometimes you have to reopen wounds, right? If they get gangrenous.
Exposure therapy, maybe. Emotional wounds.
Yeah, clean it out, re-suture it. Yeah, that's important. You don't want to let the infection fester, which is, you know, maybe the crabs that Patrick could be dealing with. But Mike, what do you think for the healer of the week?
So going back to Probst's definition, healers are, they receive acts of gratitude for healing their emotional and physical pain. I'm also going to go with the hustler, but I'm going to go with fellow Allie here, because even though Allie might not necessarily be healing, you know, her maybe her wardrobe's pain by wearing those jeans in the ocean, I feel like there were a lot of scenes where people were coming to her with their problems, especially Simone. And she was like giving Simone advice as to how to fit in more. So she really did seem like the tribe therapist for a hot second. So she's going to be my choice for healer of the week.
I like that. I think I'm going to go a little non-conventional for the healer. I'm going to say the ocean. The ocean really deserves some credit this episode. The aquadumps, providing food, hiding idols if you're Joe. I think the ocean is really the healer of this episode.
It's a very like Courtney Merritt from Exile Island answer. Like the true healer is the ocean.
Yes, well, that's what I came up with in my shitty apartment. I'm sorry, not shitty apartment.
No, absolutely not. Don't say shitty around Bruce, by the way.
Poor Bruce. All right. So last award that we get to give out, and that is the Hustler of the Week. So I was actually thinking about this because, Mike, your comments about Allie, I was thinking maybe Allie is the hustler. But I think for me, I think I'm going to go with Simone. I know that it didn't end up panning out for her, but I think her willingness to gut the fish, you know, aquadumps aside, I think for me, she, you know, she really gets the hustler award. So Mike, you know, what do you think about this?
I would say that I could definitely see where that's coming from, because, again, the hustler is all about, again, according to Jeff's definition, is about, you know, your hard work ethic, getting it done no matter what, 100%. I guess I sort of went with Ryan last week because of his gameplay hustle. I'm going to go with a similar line this week. And I mean, you know, you can say whether or not it was good or bad, but Chrissy's methodical vetting process through a number two ally throughout the rest of her tribe, I think, showed a lot of hustle on her part. And she did it over the course of seemingly one day. So Chrissy gets my award this week for Hustler of the Week.
I like that. Allie, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I also had Chrissy, and I can't think fast enough to pretend that I wasn't going to say the same answer. So I'm going to support you and say Chrissy. Well, I thought the analysis was a little overblown to try and make a financial person a hero. It is very impressive to go from having basically a 50% chance to going out last week, throwing up, getting the idol from Ryan, presumably because he thought she was in the most danger. And then turning it around to be potentially at the top, and if not the top, a strong contender in her tribe. That to me makes her the Hustler of the Week.
Yeah, she has the analytical skills of the character Kent Davidson from the hit HBO comedy Veep.
Oh my goodness. Well, then who is the Tony Hale character? Like, who's the guy carrying around the bag?
Ooh, well, Ryan's job is to carry around bags, right?
Oh, that's
right?
True. All right, so that's perfect. Okay, so that wraps up our Hero, Healer, and Hustler Award of the Week. What else is on the Fun and Games docket, Mike?
So we got one more game to play, but Allie, you're not doing this alone. This time you were playing against the house, in this case, Liana. Now, in the immunity challenge, we got a nice little Easter egg for us longtime Survivor fans. They had to solve a signpost puzzle, in which case the arrows pointed to various places in which Survivor has filmed in seasons past. We are going to test both of your knowledge about places that Survivor has filmed in seasons past. So here's what's going to happen. We're going to play this concentration style. So you guys are going to go back and forth naming countries, not just places, countries in which Survivor has filmed. If you get one wrong, the other person has to get one right, and then you are eliminated. So we're just going to go do a quick little back and forth to see how many countries you can guess Survivor has been to. The true question of life has been answered. Who is better at geography, a scientist or a lawyer?
I I think this is really going to question whether or not I understand, like, what countries are actually countries.
Now I sympathize with all of the challenge competitors on the trivia challenge, where it's going to seem so easy and I'm going to be like, oh, is Africa a country?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Allie, as the visitor, let's start with you. Name me one country that Survivor has been to in its 35 seasons.
Okay, I'm going to say Fiji.
That Fiji is correct. Okay. Starting off strong. All right, Liana, your turn.
Gabon.
That is correct. Allie.
Give me Thailand.
That is correct. Liana.
China.
That is correct. Allie.
I will take the Philippines.
That is correct. Liana.
Australia.
Shit.
That is correct, where they speak Dutch. Allie.
Okay, give me 1 second. that was my next one I had queued up. Now I have like the locations that are not countries, and I don't know where those are in my head. Nicaragua.
That is correct. Liana.
Panama.
That is correct. Allie.
I had both of those at the same time.
Oh, no. Oh, Central America is off the table.
Cha-cha. Do I have like a second to think? I'm feeling like very...
I will give you 5 seconds.
No, now I'm on the clock and I can't perform.
The, like, I will not give you 5 seconds.
Of everything.
hold on. I have all these names. I don't know if they're country. I think they're like little islands off of other countries.
Like, at least we're not playing the Jeopardy music, because I think that, you know, like that always. Oh, man, my blood pressure always skyrockets whenever.
Or the Jeff Parhardy music, which is just Jordan singing the music.
Boo.
All right. I have all of these names, but they're just like islands I don't think are countries.
You never know. It's a wide ocean out there. It's the true healer of the world.
Where the hell is Borneo? I don't know where that is. Is that a country? All right, Liana wins. Although I went first, right?
Yeah. So if you're gonna give up, Liana has to guess one more country correctly, and
all right,
she wins.
Well, okay. I'm gonna say Borneo because I said it, but I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
That is incorrect,
yeah, is
Liana.
That?
If you get this right, you win.
Yeah. Well, I don't. Okay. Well, we can talk about this afterwards. But first of all, Mike, how dare you say that Central America is off the table? You and CBS like to forget about Guatemala.
That is correct. Brian Corden loves you now, Liana. You have won the I'll call this last one out, the Eliminator Challenge about countries that Survivor has filmed in. You guys got a good amount. I'll read off the ones that you haven't guessed. Ali, you were in the Borneo region, but Borneo is actually located in the country of Malaysia.
Yeah.
Where Derek Zoolander was trying to assassinate the prime minister at one point in time. We have Kenya, which is the location of Survivor Africa, French Polynesia for Marquesas, Brazil for Amazon and Tocantins, Vanuatu, Palau, Cook Islands as a country, Samoa, where they've been several times, and Cambodia. But all in all, I think you both did a good job. But unfortunately, the house is the winner of this game.
Vanuatu and Samoa were two I had, but I wasn't sure if they were their own country.
Well, that's why I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure Micronesia is not its own country. And then that's the thing with like Borneo and stuff like that. It's like, oh, is this a country? Yikes.
Well, I think you both did a good job. I think you should pat yourselves on the back for your geography skills here. Let's move on to our final segment of each and every week here on the RHAP B&B, the question of the week. Last week, we posed the question out there to the listener nation. Where would you hide an idol? Considering how furtive Alan was in his search last week, where would you be able to hide an idol in order to escape watchful eyes? We'll go through some of your answers first, and then we'll each give our answers. So here are some answers that you gave to the question. Dominic Malpietti said, I'd like to see someone hide the idol in a man bun. Even the great Alan Ball wouldn't think to check there.
Amazing.
It's a good one. Yeah, Joey amazing, in fact.
Well, so I guess, do you guys remember like Bumpets when those were in style back in like the early 2010s? Could you say that like I'm rocking the Bumpet again?
Mike, I literally have written down under my jersey poof.
Yes.
We just got a match in the B&B match game.
Yeah, I was going to say, I always try to forget that those Bumpets existed, but I'm pretty sure they're still running on infomercials.
Look into one because I'm being Michelle Visage for Halloween, so it's not just for Seizure.
Oh my God.
Don't go and do yourself a favor. Don't go in green. I don't think she'll get the joke. If you're Tamar Braxton. Evan Windsor said, at this point in the season, I think the funniest place to hide an idol would be in Alan Ball's pants. And Emma Rose said the same thing. I do love this idea of Alan being like, you have the idol, and you're like, no, Alan, you do. Check your pants.
That's like some weird magician trick.
Oh yeah, like, Matt Tarrant from Australian Survivor would be able to be the only one to pull this off, or maybe Morgan McDevitt from the aforementioned Guatemala, since she was a magician's assistant.
Oh, yikes. Yeah, that would be actually that would be really funny. I would love to see that, you know, just to, like, someone would be like, is this your idol? Oh, no, wait, check your pants.
Edwin Johnson says, I would hide the idol at tribal council. Just don't ask me how. So do you guys have any ideas about where you could hide the idol at tribal council to guarantee that the janitors wouldn't go through and take it away next time you come back?
That's a good question. What would production do? So, like, for example, if you carried it up and put it in, say, the urn, or like hung it alongside, you know, along the side of the voting desk thing, right? Like, what? I don't know. I mean, technically, it's still yours. I'm not 100% sure on all of the idol rules, but nobody can just take it, right? So it would be able to stay yours.
I feel like we're playing crazy or confident, and this is crazy.
Yeah, this. I mean, all of these answers are going to be crazy. Let's be completely honest here. The great Will Holston said, I would hide the idol in a DVD copy of 180, Coach's big screen acting debut. No one has ever opened that case. Valid point. Maybe the Daniel DiLorenzo's family opened it, quickly realized that there was a makeout scene between her and Coach, and tried to bury every copy in a landfill like the E.T. game.
Oh, God. Can you imagine if that's your personal item? You're like, everybody's requesting, oh, you know, I want a picture of my family, blah, blah, blah. You're like, I would like a DVD copy of 180, please.
What, are you just gonna read the description on the back?
Yeah,
just imagine the special features.
Well, I meant for hiding the idol, but sure. Yeah. Oh, okay. If you would like to be preoccupied with all of, I'm sure, the great reviews of, like, this is a movie that was released
by Rupert. Are these Rupert movie reviews?
Yeah, he is not a bot, how dare you.
The camera was on the people most of the time. John Tinkham says, the best place to hide an idol would be in Bryant Gumbel's private dressing room, because the door is always locked and the room is only used for watching audition tapes. Hopefully not throwing the new maitre d' of our B&B restaurant under the bus there.
I wouldn't want to go in there at all to even hide the idol there. So that's fair. I would definitely never look.
All right. And last but not least, a little bit of a RuPaul's Drag Race reference that I had to throw in here since Allie is on this week. Mandy Billing says, I must be having RuCap withdrawals, because when asked for the best place to hide an idol, my first thought was Trinity Taylor, which doesn't make any sense. But I just think it's a hilarious thought to hide the idol. And I mean, Trinity Taylor, let's be honest, she's got a lot of hump. So there's a lot of place to possibly
no,
hide that
it's
thing.
The tuck. Because the girl can tuck. Ooh. She's the, yeah, Trinity the Tuck Taylor. She would be able to hide an idol, if anybody, on their person. I really don't think that Alan Ball would find it.
Liana, where, in your opinion, is the best place to hide an idol?
Okay, so this came to me in a dream, which means it's probably a horrible idea. And not the, like, Shambo-type dream where she had to target...
yeah, I was going to say, what did the chickens tell you?
Yeah, right, the chickens told me... Okay, so this was my hair-brained idea, not wig-brained idea. So... I would hide the idol out in the open. I would tie it onto my bag, pretend it was a trinket that I found, and then completely feign ignorance. I'm sure this is a horrible idea, and there's so many people being like, you're a complete idiot. But like I said, it came to me in a dream, so I decided to go with it.
All right. Yeah. No, I'm feeling that. My answer was going to go along the same lines. Actually, what I would do is try to make a bunch of fake idols, and then, I don't know, hang my real idol and all the fake idols like around the tribe flag, just to make it think that, like, oh, these are fun, yeah, little cultural decorations that, you know, production provided, and that way nobody knows which is the real idol. It's sort of like in China when they had the four wood panels above the shelter and only one of them was the idol. If you throw out enough decoys, I feel like it's harder to tell which one's the real one.
Yeah, see, that's great. Oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I was thinking, is that it would just be this sort of, oh yeah, no, I don't know, I like washed up on the beach, or, you know, I found it, like, I think it's pretty, you know, cool. And then of course you have to, I don't know, eat the note that came with it about this is a hidden immunity idol, but see, great minds.
Allie, do you have any thoughts about where you would want to hide an idol?
Yeah, don't worry about eating the note, just leave it to the healing powers of the ocean. But you can
throw it into the ocean like Job tried to do with that letter.
I would say, can you not wear it underneath your clothes like a concerned tourist in another country, like the money pouch?
I mean, I guess people will ask about the bulge and you're suspect to an idol strip search, but I guess if you want to take that risk.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I've never really thought about, people have asked me while watching the show with some casuals and some new people, people be like, oh, well, where do they put it? I'm like, they bury it. Like, I don't know where they put it. But I just make up answers. I'm going to say I would always want to keep it on my person. I know that's dangerous, but better in my hands than in someone else's. I like the plain sight idea. Based on the fake idols we've seen made without kits. I think it would be difficult to get enough similar looking trinkets to disguise the way an idol looks. But I like the idea.
I like that Rupert impression, by the way, Allie, with they buried it.
That's an impression of me. That's how I feel about myself.
Oh, boy. We're holding up this mirror, this diving mask to society in the RHAP B&B. Who said we weren't going to get deep? Thank you for the great answers to this question of the week. This next week's question of the week, in response to Ryan's interesting comparison at Tribal Council to the birthday party, what metaphor would you use to describe Tribal Council? I'll open up the grammar limits. It can be a metaphor or it can be a simile. You can say Tribal Council is like blank. But you guys got real creative this week, so I'm hopeful you'll stay on that creative momentum to be able to come up with various comparisons of Tribal Council to things, events, people, etc.
This really was a metaphor or simile filled episode. We had Ben talking about how this group is like old paint. It's cracked and fractured. Patrick's like a newborn baby. The birthday party, the sad birthday party, that metaphor was just so like hilarious. I was just like Jeff Probst and like, what are you talking about?
It's one of those things where, like, if you broke it down more, like when I watched the episode a second time, I transcribed it and it makes a little more sense. But I think just like Jeff, when you're hearing this for the first time, you can't make heads or tails of it whatsoever.
I just don't understand why you want to keep like, and then he goes on to talk about keeping all the kids at the party. I didn't realize that sad birthday parties, you had to kick kids out. That's just sort of depressing. I guess that's why it's sad.
Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe something sad happened at the birthday party to have to kick the kids out.
Yikes. Aquadumps.
Oh, boy. Yes. A kid pooping in the pool is definitely a reason to call off a birthday party, at least from my point of view. All right. That's going to do it for this week on RHAP B&B after episode 2 of season 35. Allie, thank you so much for coming on. This was so much fun to talk to you about your grandmother's opinions, about the conversation topics you use at fancy events. I feel like we truly got to know you as a person as well as a Survivor fan.
This was my episode of The Taran Show. I will say this was great. I will be leaving you a 5-star review for other guests who might want to check in. This was fantastic. Thank you so much for having me.
Do you want to plug your social media handle and all the great MTV-based stuff you're working on in wrap-ups?
Yeah, so you can follow me at Lash Tweets. I am doing 2-a-days now between Are You the One and The Challenge, which drop sometime between Wednesday and Friday every week. I'll also be chatting on the TV Party app about Survivor and Are You the One and some Real Housewives shows. You can join me there, too. And I was going to say something else, but Mike, for old time's sake, when you close out, can you please give us a RuPaul's Drag Race exit?
Yes, just for you, Allie, and for the people who was able to get through the dirge of the 2 minutes of Drag Race discussion, I will do it. Liana, how can people find you on social media? And we have another engagement coming up talking about Survivor soon, don't we?
We do. So I am on Twitter at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. And Mike and I are going to be back together next week, not talking about the B&B, although we will be checking in to stay later. We're going to be talking about the finale of Australian Survivor. So that should be super exciting, despite maybe a lackluster Final Four. But I'm really excited to dig into that with you.
So Leon and I got together, for those that don't know about the International Survivor, we got together for the Survivor New Zealand finale, and that was a lot of fun. It's going to apparently be a similar supersized week. We're getting 3 episodes as well as a reunion. And so Leon and I are going to break it all down and talk about the season. We're going to be answering a lot of your questions. We're going to be aiming to record that around Wednesday night in American time, right after the episode. So if you have questions as the week progresses, feel free to send them directly to us and we'll answer them. But yeah, really excited to venture outside of American Survivor talk for a brief second to talk about Australian Survivor.
We're going
to
talk about some lollies. Also, if you know you're feeling a masochistic streak and want to listen to more Big Brother coverage, I joined Dom and Colin on the Dom and Colin podcast last week to wrap up the season of Big Brother. I did an intro podcast with them, and so this was sort of a great way to put the bookends on this season. So if you're interested in that, please check that out.
Yes, the rule book end, which Chrissy from Big Brother OTT was checking out meticulously. You can follow me on Twitter at amikebloomtype. If you wanted to see me talk more Survivor in the moment, I talked in my immediate reactions to the episode on Survivor with Jay, Jack, and Colleen. Speaking of that network, I also just started covering Stranger Things with Jay and Jack. I just watched the first two episodes of Stranger Things and recorded my thoughts about it. I was admittedly initially scared away by the first 5 minutes of the first episode. I pushed through it this time for the sake of the rewatch, and I'm greatly enjoying it so far. We've been covering SNL on Posha Recaps, myself and Rich Tackenberg, talking about the Ryan Gosling premiere, and we're going to be talking about the Gal Gadot episode on Sunday, so make sure you're tuned into all of that. Of course, follow the stuff I'm doing on Parade as well as I continue exit interviews throughout the course of the season. If you are not subscribed to Reality TV or Hap-Ups or the Survivor feed yet, this is where you'll find the B&B week after week after week. Speaking of next week, next week's guest will be the one and only Megan Z, who either beat or tied Rob at This Week in Survivor History. I think the jury's still out on that, but someone who, you know, I talked Celebrity Apprentice back in the day with. By back in the day, I mean like 9 months ago at this point, which is so crazy. Where's the time gone to? But that should be a lot of fun. Special thanks to Scott St. Pierre for all of his great stuff behind the scenes. Special thanks to Paul Osleson for working with us on all of these games and for coming up with the last one out country eliminator game that we did this week. Again, Liana, thank you so much. Ali, thank you so much. If you want to talk about this show, please use hashtag RHAPBNB. So if you're submitting answers to the question of the week, if you are just sending us feedback, we do want to hear your feedback. This is still a podcast that's kind of growing in utero. So if you have thoughts about what worked, what didn't work, what you want us to talk about, we'd love to hear it. Hashtag RHAPBNB. But that's going to do it this week. Thank you so, so much for coming into the BNB. For now, sashay away. Bye.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.